Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to, this is now the third edition, Matt? Third episode?
Yep.
The third episode of the MLB Daily Dish podcast, The Roster Rhetorical. As always, I'm your host, Chris Schubert, and as you heard, Matt Goldman is here with me. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm good. It's baseball. It's playoff baseball time, so I'm excited. And instead of Mike Bates, we have the first ever guest on the show that is not a member of the MLB Daily Dish staff. Manu Mishra is with us. Manu, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
No, yeah, it's a pleasure. And you know what? For our listeners who don't know you, why don't you go ahead and tell a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm Manu Mishra, and I'd like to think I'm kind of a big deal on Cubs Twitter, but I am a writer for SB Nation as well. I've penned some pieces over at D-Rays Bay, mostly doing Game of Thrones reviews, but there's been some baseball content in there as well. And otherwise, I'm just a Chicagoan. I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, and that's what I'm here to talk about.
So you're a pretty huge Cubs fan, so this is a pretty big time for you, right?
Yes, I've been pretty much a disaster for the last week and a half, ever since we've clinched, because it's all been building up till tomorrow.
Well, and that's why we have you on, because we want to talk about tomorrow. The Cubs are going to play the Pirates in the second of the two wild card games. The first one is taking place in about a half an hour from the time that we're recording this. This will go out tomorrow, which is what, Wednesday? Right? Tomorrow will be Wednesday.
Yes.
So this will go on Wednesday, and that means the Cubs-Pirates game will be that night. And we want to talk Cubs-Pirates. So, Manu, you're the guest. I'll start with you, and this may be a little biased, but what do you see being this matchup and how it plays out?
Well, I mean, you have to start with the starting pitching. And obviously, in Chicago, and you know, the national media darling right now is Jake Arrieta, because of his strong second half, especially the last 2 months. I think he's given up like one earned run over, you know, like the last seven or eight starts. So that's what, you know, Chicago is really pumped up about. But I'm actually really interested to see what Gerrit Cole has, because, I mean, stuff-wise, he's every bit the match that, you know, Arrieta can be on the mound. And, I mean, I think it's a pretty even, you know, matchup, and I expect a very low-scoring game overall.
And Matt, I think that's the key here that everyone wants to talk about is how good of a pitching matchup this is. And, you know, everybody will talk to pitching to death, but this very well could be an offensive game as well, right? Both teams have pretty good offensive numbers.
Yeah, obviously it's a possibility. I know Chris Bryant was quoted earlier today talking about how big the outfield is and how much it surprised him that he thought he had a couple homers in that park during the year that just, you know, fell harmlessly into an outfielder's glove. And you don't really hear about Pittsburgh being a pitcher's park all too much, at least I don't over here on the West Coast. So that could be an interesting factor for both pitchers, obviously, and then the offenses as well.
I don't know what to say other than I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a matchup of who can get to the bullpens first. Both pitchers are really good, but the bullpens aren't, you know, as great as some of the other bullpens in the league, like Kansas City. So I think it may be a matchup of which offense can kind of force the starting pitcher out of the equation and they can get to the bullpen and score a run. And the dynamic in this is that it's only one game. So you're not trying to play this, you know, if I can get the pitcher out early in the fifth, I can, you know, get to their bullpen in game three. You're trying to win one game. And I think this wild card system that they've put in place really emphasizes the manager's role in the playoffs, especially in this one game. Would you guys agree with that?
I would.
Well, what is your X factor or the key for both teams? Manu, I'm obviously expecting you to say the Cubs won first.
Well, starting with the Cubs, I think the most important hitter down the stretch has been Starlin Castro. Rizzo, Bryant, they've been, you know, rocks all year. But really, this surge, you know, ever since like early August has really coincided with initially a benching of Castro and then him taking hold of that second base spot when him and Addison Russell switched up the middle. And I think him performing, because he's been hitting in the 5-6 hole, you know, with Rizzo and Bryant on base, him driving in runs might be the key for the Cubs. For the Pirates, I think it's going to come down to who gets on in front of McCutchen. He's obviously the guy that the Cubs are going to not try to let beat them, but you know, with Harrison and Marte, and I know they've been flipping the top of the lineup around the last couple weeks, but you know, if they can, you know, get on, and force Arrieta to pitch to McCutchen, you know, that's probably the best chance they got from my standpoint.
Matt, for you, what are the keys for both sides?
For the Cubs, I definitely like the Starlin Castro pick, and it's just a coincidence. I wrote an article over at Beyond the Box Score on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday. About Castro's resurgence and how he's now driving pitches that are actually in the strike zone, because for the last 2 years, he's generated almost all of his power from outside the strike zone, which is definitely an odd pattern to have and generally not a successful one. So now that they've changed his stance before the pitch comes out, he's seemingly got a better path to the ball. But for the Cubs, I'm going to go with Kyle Schwarber being the X factor, at least for this wild card game. He's been kind of in a slump over the last couple of weeks. As the season wound down, his exit velocity has plummeted. It's barely above league average now, whereas he was usually about 5 or 6 miles ahead of the league average. So that's interesting to me that he's maybe just getting tired, or pitchers have changed their approach towards him. And then for the Pirates, I'm going to go with Francisco Cervelli being the X factor. He's obviously done a huge job behind the plate in framing runs. And kind of keeping that continuity that they had before, or I guess when they had Russell Martin. I remember there was a panic that when he left, their pitchers were going to go with him, and that they weren't going to be able to get as much out of the strike zone. And Cervelli's proven to be a pretty good hitter this year. He's got a WRC plus of 119, and he showed just a week ago that you really can't look over him as the, I can't remember which team it was, but he was, I think it was the Cardinals. They walked the bases loaded intentionally in front of Cervelli, and he thanked them by hitting a grand slam over the left field wall.
I think what is not highlighted, because it happened kind of long ago, was the injury to Jung Ho Kang for the Pirates. The loss of him in that lineup really has had them tinkering with who they put around McCutchen in the lineup in order to protect him and maximize their offense. So it'll be interesting to see what Clint Hurdle rolls out there in terms of a lineup in a one-game playoff. But I want to switch to the familiarity, the familiarness that the Pirates have with playing in these games that the Cubs don't have. The Pirates have been in this position before. They've been in this position a lot since they've become successful, whereas the Cubs are making their first playoff appearance since 2008. Do either of you see the inexperience of the Cubs and the youth that the Cubs have, playing a difference in who wins and loses this game?
Personally, I don't really. A couple of things there. First of all, I think sometimes the youth experience factor just gets overstated. It makes a little nice narrative, but we usually only jump to it after the fact. But I think specifically you look at Joe Maddon, who's kept a really loose clubhouse throughout the year, but specifically down the stretch. And you can see that with some of their, costumed road trips and such. But also, they got Miguel Montero, John Lester, even though he's not starting. Anthony Rizzo and Starlin Castro have been, playing in the league for, 4 or 5 years now, even if they're still, 26 years old. So I think the youth is something that people are going to look at when comparing the two teams. But I think ultimately in a one-game sample, it's really just going to come down to the talent on the field.
Matt, would you agree that the narrative of inexperience and youth of teams is very overstated, especially around this time of year?
Yeah, and especially in regards to these two teams, I think it's more important, and Manu kind of touched on it, to look more at the managers than, say, the players. They've played 162 games this season, not including spring training. And at the end of the day, they do have to look at this as just another game. And you always hear players talk about, their first at bat or their first inning in the field, they've got a little more jitters than they're used to. But after that, they kind of settle into a groove. And I think you got to give the even though the Pirates have home field advantage, I think the Cubs, I'm really picking them to come out of this out of the wild card game. Joe Maddon is just such, he's such a stabilizing force, and he's been in a situation like this before. September 28th of 2011 was the, what's commonly referred to as the greatest day in baseball. And he had to manage his way from, I want to say, a 7-run deficit to come back and win that game. And I just think him versus Clint Hurdle, managerial matchups usually don't get the huge press that the pitching matchups do. But I think that's the one that they need to key in on more, is the difference between Hurdle and Maddon once the game gets underway.
Matt, you jumped the gun on me. You said your prediction before I could segue to it. That was nice. So you have the Cubs. Now, I'm just going to go out on a limb here, Manu, and say that you also have the Cubs. Is that fair?
That's fair. I've tried to convince myself to not be a homer for this purpose, but it's hard having watched Arrieta down the stretch. I think the Cubs win, and I think just to go to your point about, you know, getting to the bullpen first, the Cubs are probably going to have three or four, like, regular everyday hitters on their bench, and Austin Jackson, Jorge Soler, Chris Coughlin. So I think late in the game, they have a matchup advantage, and they could run out lefties and righties, and I could see that being a deciding factor. So I have the Cubs winning late in the game.
Now, I'm going to spoil this for a potential future episode, maybe next week's episode, but I have the Pirates winning the World Series, so that would require them winning this game tomorrow night, or tonight, as this episode will be on in the morning. So I'm taking the Pirates for a myriad of reasons. I'm playing the experience card. They've been here before. They know what it takes to win this game. And in those key moments, maybe late in the 6th, 7th, 8th innings, when there are some crucial at-bats, I think they'll be able to come up with some big hits at some big times and win. I think being home helps. I know the math says it's only about a 54% chance to win when you have home field advantage. But in the playoffs, it just feels like that matters a little bit more than that. So I'm taking the Pirates because I need them to win, because I picked them to win the World Series. That's really what it comes
down to. Good reason.
Yeah. All right, so let's shift gears to the NLDS matchup we know, because the winner of the Cubs-Pirates is going to play the Cardinals. And, Matt, it wouldn't be the Mets if there wasn't some drama before they got to Los Angeles.
Of course not.
And there was some drama today when Matt Harvey did not show up for the, as Sandy Alderson called it, mandatory workout. And I could feel within some Mets fans that they thought maybe he wasn't going to pitch Game 3 for some reason. And that was put to bed with both Terry and Sandy saying that he was going to play. But putting that aside, because that's not even a concern, what do you see being the biggest hurdle for both of these teams to overcome if they want to win this series, Matt?
Well, for the Mets, they're going to have to deal with the fact that they don't have Juan Uribe as an option off the bench, as someone to come in a late inning situation and hopefully provide some power. And as he'll be out for at least the NLDS, and you know his injury really hasn't—he's not recovering from his injury seemingly at all at this point. And you have to wonder that if the Mets did get to the NLCS, if maybe he wouldn't be available. And then for the Dodgers, it sounds weird to say it, but I think it's Clayton Kershaw. He's not been good. Not good is probably the wrong phrasing of words, considering he didn't give up that many runs to the Cardinals his last time out in the NLCS last year, the NLDS. But he hasn't had the best postseason luck, and obviously he had an amazing season. He had 301 strikeouts and another sub 2.3 ERA. But the Dodgers, their pitching isn't that deep, and they're going to need Greinke and Kershaw to both be as good as they have been in the regular season, which is a tall order considering how good that they have been. But, you know, they're built upon those two guys for the playoffs. And if they can't get two wins out of them, or at least one win each, you know, in the first two games, they might be in for a long, or I guess rather a short stay in the playoffs with the rotation that the Mets have.
Manu, is it fair to say that the starting pitching of the Mets is as good, if not a little bit better, than what the Dodgers are going to be able to put out in a five-game series?
I think that's the key. It's that it's a five-game series. And, I mean, obviously you're not going to have a 1-2 better than Greinke and Kershaw. But, you know, 1-4 I don't know exactly how they're going to line up the playoff rotation after game 3. But, I mean, they can go toe-to-toe. And neither, you know, team's offense is something that you really expect to light you on fire. So I expect low-scoring games anyways. So in that situation, I can definitely see the Mets, you know, going pitch for pitch with the Dodger staff.
Matt, how much of an impact is the future of Steven Matz's role in the Mets rotation? How understated is that? Because they don't really know what they're doing beyond game 3, like Manu said. I mean, it's going to be DeGrom, Harvey, Syndergaard. And then after that, they kind of don't know. I know Matt's pitched in the instructional league today and threw about 90, 95 pitches. So it looks like he's going to be ready. But the Mets can't fill out their roster until they know what level of health he's at.
Yeah, he's got – the Mets situation is just so strange to me at this, you know, this point in the year. You think that it would have been more of a general plan, even with injuries. You got to have contingencies. But, you know, if, you know, say a series goes 5 games or 7 games, the Mets pitching is, it's not suspect because it can't be suspect when you have DeGrom and Syndergaard and Harvey for at least one game. But Terry Collins has not committed one way or the other to saying that Harvey would be able to start twice in one round of the playoffs. And that kind of makes you think that he wouldn't be able to, because if Harvey was available for 2 games, you'd come out and say that. And then getting back to Matt's, he's just been so injury prone, whether it's his elbow or his back or sleeping wrong. You can't really count on him either. And it's a pretty steep drop off after Harvey and Matt's, because the next best choice is the ageless wonder of Barton. And, you know, even though he's had great starts this year, I want to say his last start was pretty good. I think he had a no hitter at least for 4 innings or so. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Chris. But obviously, you'd rather have Harvey and Matts than Bartolo. So if neither of them can go more than one game, or Matts isn't available at all because they deem him not healthy enough, then the other teams are going to probably be licking their chops.
I think we all would love to see Bartolo Colon make a start in the playoffs, just so we can see him enter the batter's box in a crucial spot and strike out and lose his helmet. I think that's what the baseball world really wants. I know, as a Mets guy, that's what I would want. Matt, you hit the nail on the head. Juan Uribe missing is a huge deal. Kirk Neuenhuis appears to be, they haven't come out and said it yet because I still think they're trying to figure out who their 11 pitchers are. But Kirk Neuenhuis seems to be the guy that's going to take his place. Gives them a left-handed bat, gives them outfield defense, gives them power. It just gives them a better pinch hitting opportunities, because Kirk is not going to touch the field as a starter. And they have enough infield depth with Flores, Tejada, Murphy. They have the tools. Kelly Johnson, they can tinker with it that way. Manu, I want to bring you in here. How important are the bullpens for these two teams? I think we mentioned it with the Cubs-Pirates, how beyond the two starters, the bullpens are going to be important. But in this series, especially with the talent that there is for both sides in starting pitching, at least at the top, the bullpens, how important are they going to be in this long series?
I mean, obviously, in the playoffs as a whole, the bullpens become really important. It'll be interesting to see the matchups they play, because obviously the Dodgers are a little more left-handed overall, and see, you know, how they try to how the Mets try to deploy their bullpen against that. That's basically all I got, because I'm not that familiar with their bullpens, you know, player by player. But I just know that the Dodgers lineup with its handedness is a little more trickier to navigate than the Mets's.
And that's why the Mets are having a really tough time trying to figure out who that 11th pitcher is going to be, because they're trying to take into account the Matt's injury, which we've stated, but also they're debating whether to keep John Neese, Sean Gilmartin. I mean, they have options to match up against these lefties. Matt, Tyler Clippert is good historically against lefties, right? I'm not remembering that wrong.
I want to say that his splits aren't horribly exaggerated, but I don't. I can't come up with the number off the top of my head. But if you give me a second, I can.
I just remember them making a point in the broadcast, or at least on Twitter, that Clippert is good against lefties. His changeup allows him to be better against lefties. And with Addison Reed really taking hold of that eighth inning role, and Jairus Familia being the closer, they kind of have some mobility with what they do with Tyler Clippert. They don't have to designate him specifically as a one inning guy. They can bring him in to face a lefty or two lefties. And Sean Gilmartin has been good against lefties.
Give me the numbers. Verse left. It's weird. He's got a reverse split. Actually, first left-handers, he's holding him to a slash line of 136, 231, 237. With a 211 WOBA, and then for right-handers, he's got a line of 238, 333, 411 with a WOBA of 327. So he could definitely, I mean, obviously I'm not sure what his health is at this point, but, you know, he could definitely see more than one inning or come in for one lefty, stay in for a couple righties. They definitely have options with him.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key, because they have the two roles set in stone, and being able to tinker with the rest of their guys, you know, Eric Adell, Clippard, Carlos Torres, Gilmartin, whoever they take, and Neese or Colon if they're in the bullpen, whatever conglomerate of pitchers that they have out there, Terry Collins is going to be is better off having the ability to mix and match and play around with his bullpen instead of having these specific roles that kind of hinder his ability to move guys around. Did we go through the X factors for these teams? No? Yes? Somebody
do not think so.
All right, so the X factors for the Mets and the Dodgers, Manu, I'm putting you on the spot. What you got?
All right. For the Mets, I'm going to go with Matt Harvey. I mean, obviously there's a circus around him. There has been for a while now. And obviously today was no exception. We got a full main event. But I think how he pitches in game three, not only in terms of where the Mets are there, but that might determine how they handle their game four or game five starting decisions just based on, you know, what the series record is at that point. For the Dodgers, I'm going to go with Chase Utley.
Oh, wow. That was a good one.
I am hoping he makes a playoff roster and doesn't make me look like a fool, but I assume he will. I think, you know, his bat hasn't really come to life. You know, everyone talked about the change of scenery hopefully helping. But, you know, he's got a lot of postseason at-bats, and all it takes is, you know, one key late-inning pinch hit or, you know, situation, you know, righty on lefty against the bullpen, and, you know, he can make you pay. So I'm hoping he does it just because he's been a personal favorite player of mine. So I'm picking him by personal bias.
That's a running theme tonight. We're all going off of biases. So, Matt, the X factors for both teams in this series.
So I'll start with the Dodgers. I'm going to go with Corey Seager. He's been fantastic, and he's got only 27 games under his belt, but he's put up a 337, 425, 561 slash line. And his WRC plus says that he's better. He's a better than average hitter by 75%, and his ISO is well above 200. So he's been just incredible, especially when you consider that the other option was Jimmy Rollins, who really has not been a good hitter for at least the whole year. And I can't remember what his 2014 stats were. So I'm going Seager for the Dodgers. And then for the Mets, I'll preface this by saying it'll sound weird, but it's Yoenis Cespedes, because we haven't really, I mean, if you want to point to a reason why the Mets are in the playoffs, he's the go-to finger point. And so if he slumped for, let's say, just three games, they could have a quick exit no matter how well their pitching staff performs, because, it's obvious. Another obvious statement, but you can't win if you don't score runs. And he's been so vital to the Mets scoring runs. He's been in the middle of so many rallies and starting so many scoring barrages that it would be interesting to see how the Mets would perform if Cespedes just, you know, regressed to the player that he was that got him traded to Boston and then to Detroit.
I'm going to piggyback off that, and I'm going to say that my X factor is Lucas Duda. For the Mets, for the reason that if Cespedes struggles, the Mets have the talent to be able to pick that slack up. They have David Wright. They have Daniel Murphy. They have Curtis Granderson. They have Travis d'Arnaud. They have the pieces to be able to hit offensively. But the power that Cespedes brings would be lacking if he's unable to produce. And that's where Lucas Duda steps in. He's been inconsistent this year. He's been up and down. He's been hurt. But the power has still been there. He almost hit 30 home runs in a year where he did not play well. So for him, if he can get the bat going and get the power back to where it was, which is what we saw toward the last 2 weeks of baseball, and he hit a towering grand slam in Great American Ballpark. Yes, it is Great American Ballpark, but that would have been out pretty much anywhere. If he can get that power to the table, then they don't need to rely on one specific guy to score them the runs, like Matt said, are so crucial to winning these games. And for the Dodgers, I'm picking Jock Peterson. He came up and was gangbusters through the first 2-3 months of the year. The guy couldn't get out. He hit home runs. He did everything. And he was a linchpin for that lineup. And it fell off the face of the earth for Jock Peterson. His K percentage is at almost 30. He doesn't walk a ton. The numbers are just not good. He's hitting 210 in 151 games. It's not good. He needs to get it going, because he's a guy that you know what you're going to get from Adrian Gonzalez. You know what you're going to get from Grandal, Kendrick, Justin Turner. You know what you're going to get from those guys. But if Jock Peterson can pick it up and provide some extra oomph in that lineup, then, you know, that could be all they need in this series to take it over the top. So yeah. Predictions for this series. Manu, who you got? Please make me feel good.
I almost want to oblige you because I made the homer pick earlier, but I like the Dodgers. I think they're kind of a unsexy team compared to some of their NL opponents, but I just like their roster up and down a little more. Maybe a little less variability in the performance. You mentioned Cespedes. So I'd take the Dodgers in four.
Wow, Dodgers in four. That's disrespectful. I'm going to go with the Mets in five. I think their pitching situation overall is better. Obviously, going against Greinke and Kershaw potentially twice if they both go on short rest, which I don't know if it's been talked about, but Kershaw went on short rest last year, so I can't imagine that Mattingly would hesitate to do it again if it was necessary. But if they can trot out a rotation of DeGrom, Mats, Harvey, and Syndergaard, I just like that better than Kershaw and Greinke. And I think the Mets offense is better. They have fewer holes. I just think they're a more complete team.
I have the Mets in four. I know that's a surprise to both of you. but from the standpoint that, like Matt said, I think the Mets rotation one through four is better. I'll take my chances of pass Greinke and Kershaw, whatever they have after that. Alex Wood, Brett Anderson, whoever they trot out, I like the Mets' chances against those guys. And Kershaw hasn't been great in the postseason. And I know it's a small sample size, but it just hasn't gone well for him. And if the Mets take one of these first two at Dodger Stadium, I feel like they're going to win both at Citi Field, the first two playoff games ever in that building, the first Met playoff game since 2006. I don't see them losing at home with those pitchers. So if they just take one on the road, they're going to be able to win this. So I have the Mets winning this in four. Now, we've been talking a lot about the National League. There's some teams over in the American League that want to play some baseball as well. Two of those that we know of that are going to match up are the Toronto Blue Jays and the Texas Rangers. Guys, I don't even know where we start with this, because these were two teams that weren't even on the radar for the playoffs when the trade deadline happened. But what Toronto did at the deadline, what the Rangers did at the deadline, these two teams, like rockets in a cannon, just blew up. They just soared to the top of the standings, and here they are in the playoffs against each other. Manu, I'll start with you here. What are you looking at when you see these two teams matched up against each other?
I think the first thing that jumps out to me is that they both basically acquired their aces at the deadline, David Price in Toronto and Cole Hamels in Texas. I think, you know, most of us who have been following baseball will remember that Cole Hamels had that amazing run in 2008 where he won the World Series MVP, beat the Rays. I have some experience following the Rays, and David Price has been, you know, sometimes a little bit iffy in the playoffs. Has given up runs. I mean, granted, he's played that Rangers offense back in 2010, 2011 when it was at its peak. So I kind of look at their aces matching up, and I kind of want to give the edge to Hamels, even if Price might be, you know, maybe the better overall pitcher, given their careers up to this point.
I think your larger point is very valid, that these two teams kind of constructed themselves at the deadline. They're two linchpins of their rotation. The two guys that got them to the postseason were acquired on July 31st or the days prior. Matt, the Toronto Blue Jays offense is pretty good, right?
Yeah, historically, if you want to look at RE24, which measures the run expectancy based on what the situation is at the time. So runners on first and second, two outs, nobody out, stuff like that. The Blue Jays have the best offense in the history of Major League Baseball by quite a bit. They beat the 98 Yankees by about 30 points at last time I checked. So to say that the Blue Jays offense is good is, I think, a pretty fair statement.
Matt, we missed you last week with all of your stats. I just want you to know that you were sorely missed on last week's show. But the Rangers offense ain't bad either. Elvis Andrews, Prince Fielder, Shinshu Chu, Adrian Beltre. It's not bad. I mean, that's they can probably hang with the Blue Jays in terms of offense, right?
It's definitely not bad. And the fact that Shinshu Chu has become the player that they signed seemingly out of nowhere is obviously a fantastic addition for them. It's almost like they picked up a new hitter at the deadline, because he's just been one of the best in baseball over the last month or so.
Manu, I want to get into the X factor for these two teams. So who you got?
All right. For the Rangers, I'm going to go with Prince Fielder. I think he's had a really solid year. It's kind of gone under the radar. I know he's up for a comeback player of the year, but, you know, names like A-Rod are kind of overshadowing him. But he's been a really solid presence in that lineup, and I expect him to actually do some damage this series. Looking at the Blue Jays, I'm going to look at Joey Bats. This is his first time in the playoffs, and, I mean, I know he's probably – you know, kind of not the hitter he was maybe 2-3 years ago when he was hitting 47 home runs. But I expect him to, you know, put his wood on the ball, and I expect him to be a big factor in the series.
Now, Matt, I don't want to embarrass myself here because I'm going to do mine. Is Troy Tulowitzki healthy for the playoffs?
Yes.
He's fine, right? I'm not going to – okay.
No, he played at least the final game of the regular season, if not the two.
Okay, I just want to make sure I wasn't going to make a complete fool of myself on the episode, because he is my pick for the X-Factor for the Blue Jays. Josh Donaldson, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, those are all great, and those three guys were in the lineup all year for them. But this didn't really turn around until they got Troy Tulowitzki and David Price for their rotation. So him offensively allows them to move those guys down in the lineup, make it top to bottom one of the best lineups I've ever seen watching baseball. They're just hard to pitch to. I dream of a scenario where Matt Harvey and Jacob deGrom can pitch against these guys in a World Series, because that would be fun to watch, because these guys can hit the ball. But Troy Tulowitzki staying healthy, being able to play shortstop is going to be key for them. For the Rangers, I'm picking Josh Hamilton. The Angels essentially paid Josh Hamilton to eliminate them from the playoffs on the last day of the regular season. His addition to that lineup this year has been very understated. He's been able to hit it for a ton of power, protect Prince Fielder, just give them more depth to their lineup, and he's been really huge for them. And if he can bring that power to the postseason, they're going to be tough to stop. So, Matt, I will turn it over to you for your X Factors. Hopefully I didn't steal any of them from you.
You stole my Blue Jays one.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Okay. But, you know, even without Tulowitzki, because he wasn't the greatest offensive force after coming over to Toronto, but the Blue Jays still had by far the best offense in baseball this year, if not one of the greatest ever. So if he can even just be a league average hitter and keep the lineup turning over, going from spot to spot, I just don't see how the Blue Jays are beatable, even if their pitchers give up six runs. That just looks like a one-run deficit to the Blue Jays, the way that they're swinging the bat. So I'm with you on Tulo. And for the Rangers, I'm going to go with not one player, but their starting rotation just in general. Because after you get past Gallardo and Cole Hamels, they've got a lot of question marks. I don't think they've actually set their rotation yet. I could be wrong, especially by the time this comes out tomorrow. And it's also interesting that the Rangers aren't going to have Cole Hamels pitch game one against the Blue Jays, which I kind of I think I like that, actually, because, you know, you're going up against David Price. The chances of you of that team. The chances of the Rangers beating David Price is slim enough already. So I like the strategy that Jeff Banister is employing here in saving their ace for game two. Not that Marcus Stroman is an easy task to take down, but I think they've obviously got a better shot at taking game two than game one.
So to close up the show, let's give our predictions here for the Toronto Blue Jays and the Texas Rangers. Manu?
I just like Toronto a little too much right now. I'm going to say Toronto sweeps.
Yeah, I've got Toronto sweeping.
Oh, I had Toronto sweeping too. We all stole each other.
Nice.
Manu, you stole the thunder from everybody.
I'm sorry. This is what happens when you bring a guest on. I'm too unpredictable.
Yeah, you know what? You bring up a good point. Maybe we won't have guests on anymore.
Well, then I get to be the only one. I'm very happy with that.
And you are the first one. So how does that make you feel?
It's great. I'd be lying if I said I've heard of this podcast before I got the email today. But my friend told me about this, and I trust him and his baseball opinions. So I was very thrilled to have this opportunity. I can't thank you guys enough.
Well, we thank you for being here. And Matt, did you hear the rumor from last week about the guest that Cotillo wanted me to get?
No.
He wanted me to get Justin on the show, but Justin doesn't want to be on the show.
Oh, I guess I kind of saw that that little chat at the end, but I didn't know that stemmed from anything.
Yeah, at the end of the show last week, Cotillo was like, hey, what are the chances we can get Justin on? I said, I'll see what I can do. I don't know if that's possible. But, yeah, so we tried to get our boss on the show. It didn't work.
But Justin.
Yeah, Justin. We tried to get Justin on the show, and it didn't work.
Oh, yeah. No, big fan of that guy. So
yeah, he's our boss, so we have to be big fans of him.
Oh, yeah. Technically mine, too, I guess.
Yeah. Manu, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Matt, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
And hopefully next week, I don't know what group of guys we'll have. It's a very last-minute ordeal of who we decide is on the show every week. So I guess we may have a guest, we may not. It's suspenseful. You have to just stay tuned and see. So thank you guys for joining us, and we will see you next week.